This is Audible.
Podium Publishing presents Sufficiently Advanced Magic, Book 1 of Arcane Ascension, written by Andrew Rowe, performed by Nick Podell. Chapter 1. Entry. It was the day of my judgment, and I was prepared in a thousand ways that didn't matter. If I have a choice between tests, I'll pick a dialogue or mathematical challenge before accepting a combat challenge. In the unfortunate event that I'm stuck in a combat challenge, I'll try to run if there's anything bigger than a goblin. Possibly even if it's a goblin, depending on how mean he looks. Spike traps are not my friends. Spike traps are the enemy. I will avoid them at all costs. I'd been training for this day for 5 years, since the day my brother Tristan had left for his own judgment. He'd entered the Serpent Spire and, like so many others, he'd never returned. Now at 17, I stood among hundreds of my peers. They were waiting to try their luck. But I didn't trust luck. Luck wasn't reliable. Instead of relying on the fickleness of chance, I'd taken everything with me that I thought might help. Bringing weapons and armor into the test was strictly forbidden, but there weren't any rules about bringing a backpack full of supplies. I had double-checked, triple-checked. Maybe they'd consider my grappling hook a weapon, but crossing a downed bridge was one of the most common challenges, so I doubted it. My boots were more durable than the shoes my companions tended to wear, and offered vastly better traction. Instead of a silken shirt, I wore a black leather doublet and pants. Not currently fashionable, but more likely to slow down a claw or blade. I'd studied, too. But there was a limit to what I could learn from the experiences of others. After a judgment, the memories of the individual who took the tests would rapidly fade, similar to waking from a dream. Some people held on to stronger memories than others. I read every book, essay, and scrap of paper that I could find with hints about what others had experienced, but nothing was reliable. Apparently, Selyse, our beneficent goddess, creator of this death trap tower and all the others, wanted to maintain a degree of mystery for newcomers. Even with all my preparation, I wasn't sure what my odds were of surviving the ordeal. From the grim expressions of my peers, I could tell some of them were running the same numbers in their heads that I was. Or maybe they were just intimidated by the sight of the spire. I'd seen the tower from a distance before, and I knew it was big, but that word wasn't close to describing it. Gigantic might have scratched the surface. Titanic, perhaps? I couldn't even see where it ended. The spire was roughly cylindrical in shape, constructed of dull blue stone I hadn't seen anywhere else. The circumference of the tower's base was nearly as impressive as the height. It eclipsed the size of any ordinary castle. Our scholars, military, and adventurers had spent years attempting to map the interior of the spire. Even their combined efforts barely covered a fraction of the estimated rooms within. This wasn't just due to the size. The spire's interior layout constantly changed, with rooms and passages appearing and disappearing on a daily basis. The gates of judgment were open wide, but it wasn't an inviting effect. With ogre-sized, jagged spikes of rock surrounding the entrance, it looked more like the tower had opened its jaws to swallow its victims whole. Most people were willing to risk entering the spire for a single reason. It was a chance to earn an attunement, a mark of Selyse's favor. Every attunement brought power along with it, a fragment of the goddess's blessing. Some attuned could heal wounds with a touch. Others could hurl blasts of lightning. Every attunement extracted a cost, but that didn't stop anyone from trying to earn one. Father was attuned. Mother was attuned. Shouldn't it have been easy for Tristan to pass the same tests? Tristan had every advantage. As the firstborn, mother and father trained him endlessly, drilled him on their own experiences within the tower. No two judgments were identical, but common elements had been found. Physical challenges, puzzles, tests of intellect. He'd studied, prepared, and taken every mock test imaginable. He'd still failed. Mother left not long after that, and Father insisted on personally providing me with additional training. After 2 years, he pulled me out of public school entirely. I'd been practicing dueling every day for the last 3 years. I had the scars to remind me. Father wanted to hone me into the perfect heir to the family's legacy, to earn the same attunement he had, the attunement our family was famous for. I didn't care about any of that. For me, earning an attunement was just one fraction of a longer-term plan. According to legend, the goddess would bestow a boon on anyone who was brave enough to reach the top of one of her spires. There were scattered stories of successes. Heroes who had met the goddess and wished for wealth, power, or even to join her in the divine kingdom floating high above the world. I had no intention of trying to make it to the top of the tower right now. Earning my attunement was just the first step along my path, one that would give me the power necessary to begin my climb. It could take years to grow strong enough to reach the top of the spire, but I'd get there eventually, and I'd ask the goddess to give my brother back. It was the only way to bring my family back together. I was stopped by a pair of copper-armored guards just in front of the gate.
Name?
Corn Cadence. One of the guards moved a finger down a list until he found me, crossing out the name.
I'll need to check your bag and papers.
I handed him the papers first, and then the bag. For the guard, this must have been mundane. Routine. For me, the stakes were a little more serious. I was about to risk my life, and no one I had met had even commented on that fact. No one had offered a single warning. My father hadn't even deigned to see me off at the train station. It seemed incongruous, given the time he'd spent preparing me. He'd probably decided I'd feel more confident doing this on my own. As usual, he was wrong. My hands trembled as I glanced to the entrance. I flinched as I watched the applicants in front of me fade into transparency, then nothingness as they crossed the threshold into the tower. It looked like they were disintegrating. Maybe they were. I wouldn't know until I tried. The guard handed my bag back to me.
You can head on in.
Thanks. I stepped up to the threshold. I knew what was going to happen next, but I didn't like it. No choice. I've come this far. I closed my eyes and stepped into the serpent's maw. Every inch of my exposed skin burned, like I had been out in the sun for days. Fortunately, keeping my eyes shut had spared them from sharing that sensation. Less fortunately, that hadn't prevented the nausea. My stomach reacted next, and I pitched over to vomit on the gray stone floor. My eyes fluttered open after my meager lunch abandoned me. I stood in the middle of a chamber of white stone. A bright glow illuminated the room with no discernible source. The room was circular, maybe 30 feet in diameter. At the center was a formation of waist-height pillars. I counted 12 in total. Each pillar had a single object atop it. My first challenge. My first choice. The room had 3 discernible exits, and I glanced at them before I took any further steps. One was right across from me. The others, 90 degrees to either side. I turned around briefly, but there was no exit door, just as I had been warned. The doors themselves were etched with similar runes to the ones that had guarded the tower itself. They each had a single central symbol, a circle with a colorful crystal within. The gems were blue, yellow, and red from right to left. The books I had studied had mentioned similar doors. Opening a door was as simple as touching the gem, but various authors speculated that the colors had some significance. Most believed that red was the path of violence, for example. I'd worry about that part after I figured out what I was doing here. I stepped toward the center of the room. The pillars made a smaller circle within the chamber, spread equidistant from one another. The objects on the pillars were generally easy to identify. A key, golden with a wing motif, a scroll sealed with wax, a book, roughly as thick as my closed fist. I paused there, taking a closer look at the book. The cover was leather, more in the style of a personal journal than a textbook. There was no writing on the surface. Interesting. I'll need to take a closer look at this later.
I walked over to the next section of items. The first item that caught my eye was a ruby statue of Katashi, the visage of valor. Interesting, because Katashi was not the visage typically associated with this spire. That'd be Tenjin, the visage of inspiration. The next pedestal appeared to be empty. Suspicious. The third had a quill, the tip dripping with ink. No corresponding inkwell. A magic quill, maybe? Maybe the quill is meant to be paired with the book. I walked to the next section, noting that these pillars all held weapons. A sword with an ornate bronze hilt, sheathed. A dueling cane in an unfamiliar style. A firearm. I struggled to think of the specific name, but I had only heard of them in books. It had a long barrel and a container of metallic balls next to it. I was surprised to see one, given their rarity on this side of the continent. The final three pillars all held wearable items. A dueling vest, the cloth etched with runes. A shield, wood-lined with metal. A circlet studded with numerous gemstones. I didn't see any runes etched into it, so I didn't think it was enchanted, but I wasn't exactly an expert on magic. Not yet, anyway. Well, this isn't exactly the death trap I was expecting. I'd never heard of a room like this before. Maybe most people didn't count it as a test. That seemed doubtful. My understanding was that every movement I made within the spire was being evaluated. So, I got an unusual starting room. That was fine. I'd heard about rooms with items in them before, just not this particular layout. Generally, taking items was safe. Generally. Maybe it was a test of greed. Was I supposed to leave everything behind? Or maybe just take a single item? I shook my head. I could guess indefinitely without coming up with an answer. I took a closer look at the platforms themselves, examining them for anything unusual. Hidden panels, clues, or switches. The goddess loved that sort of thing, so they said at least. I didn't find any, which was deeply worrying. Time to prioritize, then. I knew there was a good chance something would happen when I picked up the first item. Perhaps a trap would trigger somewhere, or the other items would vanish. Assuming this equipment was meant to be taken, what did I need the most? The key could be, well, a key to my success, or totally worthless. The scroll was the same. It could easily be a map to the dungeon, or some esoteric notes on mathematical theory. The book had the same degree of binary promise. The next set didn't impress me, although I did strongly consider touching the empty pedestal to see if it triggered anything. Maybe I was supposed to put something on it, sacrifice something of value in exchange for what I was taking. I'd do that if I had a chance, I decided. And if I happened to dislodge an invisible object in the process, all the better. Weapons. Yeah, those could be useful. This place was riddled with monsters, and I wasn't allowed to bring a weapon inside. Maybe the goddess knew I'd need a way to fight. Or maybe I'd only run into monsters if I took a weapon. It was broadly speculated that the configuration of the tower reacted to choices in any given room. The next section was the wearables. The dueling vest was extremely tempting. The runes on the surface made it resistant to damage from both physical attacks and weak magical ones. Depending on the density of the runes, a vest could typically handle between 1 and 3 hits before needing repairs. This one looked to be high quality. Ultimately, my curiosity made my decision for me. I put my hand on the empty pedestal, groping for an invisible object and then feeling along the surface. Nothing happened. Huh. I opened my backpack next, going through my stuff. An unlit candle, a piece of flint and a tiny metal rod for striking it, food, water, a handful of coins, a roll of bandages, and a coil of rope. The handful of coins amounted to the majority of my personal wealth, and the single gold coin, most of that. I put the coin on the pedestal. Again, no obvious reaction from the room. I left it there anyway, moving to the pedestal with the key. Flexing my hands in the air, I took a deep breath and then snatched it. Again, nothing. Sometimes a pedestal is just a pedestal, I supposed.
I wasn't going to take any chances. I dropped the key into my bag and then put one of my lesser coins in the place the key had been. The key was my first priority because I didn't think anything here would be useless. Selyse was difficult to predict, but scholars agreed that she was generally fair. Everything here would have value, either within the tower or outside it. Probably both. I needed whatever was most likely to be relevant here, and the key topped that list, followed by the quill and the scroll. Everything else was likely to have at least some value outside of the spire, and thus would not necessarily need to have any use within it. The hardest choice was determining if I wanted to take a weapon with the knowledge that the choice might influence the challenges to come. My father would have wanted me to pick up a weapon, to push for combat tests as much as possible. Our family had made our name in battle. He was a shaper like his father and his grandfather. If I didn't at least make an effort to carry on the family tradition, I knew he'd be ashamed of me. But I loathed hurting people. I always had. I'd trained with my father for years, and I enjoyed the rush of sparring as much as anyone. But in those rare moments I'd managed to hurt him, or anyone else, I'd shut down. Father thought that made me weak. Maybe he was right, but it didn't change anything. There was something I feared more than hurting others, however, and that was failing my brother. Finding him was something I was willing to fight for. I picked up the dueling cane and examined the surface. The weapon was a metallic rod about the length of my forearm. The grip was black crystal inscribed with runes that would conduct my internal essence into the weapon. I adjusted my grip so that my thumb hovered over a button, presumably the trigger. I found a switch on the opposite end, which most likely would deploy the foot-long metallic blade within. My own dueling canes had always been purely runic, the trigger mechanisms based on touching a rune and the application of focused thought. I was not an attuned. I had no magical abilities of my own, but anyone could use a dueling cane with sufficient practice. And I had practiced, and practiced. A runic weapon like this would tear mana from the inside of the wielder's body, using it to power a blast of energy if the cane was in its default state, or to charge the blade with energy if the weapon had been deployed. Duelists learned to quickly switch between states to use the melee and ranged functions. A single blast from a cane was often enough to incapacitate an unarmored target. Thus, dueling vests were used. I took the dueling vest, too, and slipped it on. I replaced both the weapon and armor with coins. Having already taken three items, I couldn't resist taking a little bit more, even knowing the ever-growing risk. I took the book and the scroll, again replacing them with coins. I really hoped the goddess liked coins. The dueling cane's mechanical parts bothered me. It was an unusual design. Foreign. I flipped the switch on the back, and it deployed a blade as I expected. I had to push the switch back in and pull it down to get the blade to retract, which was an annoyance. It was most likely spring-loaded. Well, I'd adapt. The weapon had a small clip on the bottom designed to attach to clothing, which I used to secure it on my belt. I'd draw the cane the instant I sensed any chance of combat. I flipped open the book. It appeared to be blank. A puzzle? I'd worry about it later. I put the book away. I broke the seal on the scroll next, unrolling it. On the positive side of things, this had writing on it. Unfortunately, it wasn't in a language I could read. Valderic, maybe? I wasn't a linguistics expert. I rolled it up and shoved it in my pack, mildly irritated. I briefly considered whether or not the quill was meant to be used in conjunction with the blank book. I had no way of knowing, really. One quill exchanged for one coin. A good deal for the goddess, as far as I was concerned. Maybe this whole tower thing was just an excuse to rob 17-year-olds of their hard-earned savings. I doubted it. But who could know for sure? I approached the blue door first. Blue was a nice, safe, tranquil color.
It also was generally assumed to be associated with mental traits, and I figured I had the best chance of surviving mental puzzles. I touched the gem. The door rumbled, sliding down into a depression in the ground. The next room was square-shaped, and in the midst of it, a smaller square, divided into a grid. There were three doors on the opposite side of the room, each with a different color of gem. Purple, green, and, maybe indigo? Each of the grid squares near the center had a color-coded tile, and each tile had a foreign symbol within. I really hate color-coded tile puzzles. I'd read a lot about this style of puzzle, and even tried a few practice ones. I was terrible at them. I stepped away from the door, shaking my head. It closed without any further interaction on my part. I walked over to the red door and opened it. It showed a long, narrow hallway, wide enough for two people to walk abreast. I could see the door on the opposite end, but just barely. In the middle of the path, however, was a monster. The world's most adorable monster. It looked like a big house cat with gray and white stripes, sitting with its front paws raised. It had three long bunny-like ears and a trailing rabbit-like tail. It tilted its head to the side as it saw me, giving me a quizzical expression. It was too cute to die. I stepped away from the door, chuckling to myself. It's possible I am the world's worst adventurer. One door left. The red door slid shut as I headed to the yellow and touched the final gem. The last room was square, about 20 feet across, the same size as the first one I had opened. This one was divided into smaller squares too, but in a very different way. A solid third of the squares were missing. From my vantage point in the doorway, I could see nothing below the gaps in the floor but darkness. I assumed, to be safe, that it would be certain death if I fell in one of those holes. Directly across from me, blocking one of the room's three exit doors, was a mirror. It was taller than I was and nearly twice as wide. This seemed like the most appealing option. Visible pit traps didn't worry me anywhere near as much as stepping on the wrong tile in some kind of color puzzle. I didn't step into the yellow room. Not immediately. First, I needed to map those squares. The left and right half of the room were almost symmetrical. Not quite, but it took some observation to spot the differences in the paths. Two paths led to two doors on opposite ends of the room. The third door had only a single square of floor in front of it, with no solid path to it. I'd have to jump, or otherwise problem solve to make it to that one. The doors were, of course, also color-coded. The green door was the isolated one on my left. Orange was on my right. Gold in the center. Two were clearly combinations of the colors from the first room, and I had seen green as an option in the room with the colored squares. Would both green doors lead to the same place? I wasn't sure. And it wasn't easily testable, since I knew there was a good chance the door I used to enter this chamber was going to vanish the moment I walked in. The goddess disapproved of backtracking, apparently. The room seemed too simple at a glance. The mirror probably had some kind of function that wasn't obvious from a distance. Maybe some of the tiles were illusory, and some of the gaps were actually solid, and I'd have to look in the mirror to see the true path. That seemed like a valid puzzle, and it scared me a lot less than the colored tiles. It scared me more than the cat-rat bunny, but I really wanted to avoid killing something without a cause. I scanned the room for anything I might tie my rope for a lifeline if I fell. No handrails, no obvious protrusions from the floor, just squares, some empty, some apparently safe. And the mirror, of course. I had brought a lot of rope, nearly 50 feet, coiled up, high quality. The tower was notorious for having pits, many of which would be fatal. I tied one end of the rope around my waist with a climbing knot. I prepped the other side of the rope as a crude lasso, took a deep breath, and stepped inside. As I expected, there was no exit when I turned around. I did not, however, expect the shadowy simulacrum of myself that appeared in front of the mirror. Oh, Resh. That's bad.
I raised my rope, preparing to throw it at the mirror. The duplicate copied my motions exactly, holding an identical rope. Ah, the killer shadow that mirrors what I do puzzle. A classic. I slid my foot forward, not taking a full step in case the ground in front of me was illusory. Fortunately, the next square proved as solid as it appeared. The shadow creature mirrored my movement. I waved. It waved. "Hi," I said. Even if I knew it was going to try to kill me, there was no need to be rude. It opened its mouth, mirroring me, but no sound emerged. Creepy. There was nothing overtly dangerous about the duplicate, but I was confident bad things were going to happen if it got too close, or possibly if I took too long in solving whatever I was supposed to solve. I continued to slide my foot, moving to the right side of the room. I wanted a clear throw at the mirror with my rope, without the shadow throwing a rope in my direction. I had no idea what a shadow rope might do if it hit me, or how the shadow would react if it touched my own rope. Once I was in position, I threw the rope at the mirror, and missed. The shadow mirrored me, throwing its own rope, with equally useless results. I threw the rope a second time, missing again. The tile that I had stood on when I entered the room broke away from the others, plunging into the darkness below. Oh, resh me. I have a time limit. I finished reeling in the rope, tossed it lazily over my shoulder, and pulled the dueling cane off my belt. The shadow mirrored me. If I fired at him, he'd probably fire something back at me. I didn't know if the shadow cane would produce a projectile, but if it did, it might be more dangerous than my own. I aimed at the mirror instead, pressing the button. I felt a familiar tingling as the cane siphoned mana from my arm, channeling it into the weapon's core and expelling it as a blue-white burst of arcane force. The bolt slammed into the mirror and, predictably, bounced right back at me. I didn't have time to dodge. I raised both arms in a defensive stance and the blast crashed into my forearms. The force of the burst knocked me backward, leaving one of my feet dangling just over the edge of a fatal fall. I leaned forward, falling on my knees and elbows to avoid a descent into the pit. It was only at that point that I processed what my duplicate had done. Its own projectile had been silent and nearly invisible. Tracing the path from the creature's dueling cane, however, I could see a hole in the wall, burrowing nearly 3 feet into the stone. That was a dozen times more force than I could muster, and more than enough to overwhelm my dueling vest's protection. I couldn't take this thing in a blasting fight. Breathing deeply, I pushed myself to my feet. Another tile fell into the darkness. I marched forward, following the path toward the central door, my eyes following the shadow. It mirrored me, but the room wasn't symmetrical. When I neared the middle of the room, I found the spot I was looking for, a space where I could move forward safely, but a single step would plunge the shadow into the darkness below. I stepped forward. My duplicate didn't. Instead, it raised its cane toward me. I ran. Gah! Stupid shadow not following the rules! The blast ripped through the air behind me as I rushed for the mirror, taking cover behind it. I could see three options if the shadow fired at me. The mirror would reflect the blast, the mirror would break and destroy the shadow, or the mirror would break and the shadow would be fine. Two out of three options led to my survival, and I was good with that. It was, unfortunately, impossible to see what the shadow was doing if I was fully concealed behind the mirror, and I had limited time to act. I raised my cane, listening. The creature made no sound. I can't outfight this thing. I need to outthink it. I might make it if I rush for the door, but I might not. I could try to hold out here until the shadow falls, but there's a good chance it would come around the side of the mirror and annihilate me before then. Maybe I could fire a distracting shot one way and then go around the other? Too risky. High odds it's tied to the mirror somehow, given the theme of the room. What am I doing here? I can test one hypothesis right now. I pressed my cane against the wooden back of the mirror and hit the switch for the spring-loaded blade. The blade pierced through the mirror, splintering wood and glass.
and the creature wailed in agony. Apparently it could make sound. I grabbed the cane with both hands, dragging downward as my shadow circled around the mirror. As my weapon tore through the mirror, the shadow's chest was torn apart. I stood, yelling as I ripped the weapon upward, cutting through the top of the mirror. I bisected the shadow. It fell to the ground, inert. I shivered as I watched it, trying to push the guilt from my mind. It wasn't real. It's just an illusion, a figment created by the mirror. I wasn't certain of that, but I tried to convince myself as best I could. I slammed a shoulder into the mirror, but it didn't fall. That was fine. I retracted the blade, rushing for the golden door. Maybe I had time to explore, maybe I didn't. I didn't like my odds if I waited. I touched the golden gem, revealing a room with a glass table and two glass chairs in the center. There was a board on the table with glass figures atop it. Valor, if I wasn't mistaken. Good enough. I stepped inside. Chapter 2. Valor. The door vanished behind me, of course. I pondered the significance of the door's color for a moment. Was the golden gem just representing a more challenging version of the same style of room? Or maybe these colors had some sort of cultural significance. The room could represent the tyrant in gold, for example. If it did, I was probably in a great deal of trouble. I carefully inspected the floor before I made my way forward. The square-shaped grid wasn't present here, and I didn't see any runes or indentations. There were, however, four small grates in the corners of the room. They looked inert for now, but I didn't like the look of them. The Valor board was the most obvious set piece for a puzzle. I ignored it and headed straight toward the three doors in the back of the room, green, gold, and orange, just like the last room. I didn't know how many rooms I'd have to complete in total, but I did plan to stick with gold unless I saw a good reason to switch, especially if I could skip the puzzle entirely. I moved my hand toward the golden gem, but pulled it back at the last second. There was a keyhole above the gem. I frowned and checked the other doors. They were all set up in the same way. Okay, I could deal with that. Maybe. I had a key, but I didn't know if it would fit. I headed back to the gold door, unslung the rope that was still awkwardly hanging over my shoulder, and set down my backpack. The first thing I noticed was that the rope was a lot shorter than when I had started. I'd lost the looped section, as well as over a dozen feet of length. Maybe it had been nicked by one of the blasts from my shadowy rival, or maybe it had been bisected when I stepped through the doorway into the next room. That was a scary thought. I had known the doorways were actually teleporting me, but I hadn't considered what would happen if I trailed something behind me. Could that be used to my advantage? Maybe I could use the doorways offensively in later challenges somehow. A good thing to keep in mind for the future. I undid the knot around my waist and folded up the rope, emptying out my backpack to put the remaining rope back on the bottom. When I was removing the book, though, I noticed something odd. On the cover, Trials of Judgment was now written in an antiquated style. I flipped the book open and gawked at what I saw. The first two pages had been written in. This is the room of reflection. Move swiftly. Any tile you stand upon too long will fall into the void below. The mirror poses a grave danger. Avoid showing your reflection. I really wished I had seen that earlier, but honestly, I wasn't sure I would have had time to read it even if I had known the hint was there. Was that the book's function? Hints for each room? If so, it was incredibly valuable. I flipped to the next page. This is the Room of Valor. Complete the game to advance. Beware the rising mist. I frowned. Mist? What mist? Oh, the stuff that was rising from the grates on the side of the room. I knew I hated those. I dug for the key and kept it in my left hand while I buried the other items in my pack. I considered trying it in the doors immediately. Maybe it was a way to bypass the puzzle. If it was, however, I suspected I'd only be able to use it once. According to legend, at least, the goddess didn't like people reusing the same solutions. I would rather save it if I could. I moved to the table, keeping the key close at hand. The mist was rising, but not particularly rapidly. I guessed I'd have at least a few minutes before it got high enough that I'd be breathing much of it in. Of course, if it was acid mist or something, I'd need to act a lot sooner. I'd played a lot of Valor in my youth. It was a fairly standard game of tactics, common in noble households like my own. Each side started with 20 pieces, many of which had different functions. Based on what I'd read, I assumed I'd be playing against the tower itself. If the tower played like an average civilian, I'd have a good chance. If the tower played like my childhood companion, Sarah, well, I'd have better luck inhaling the mist. The Valor board was stone, and the figures atop it were forged from red and blue gems. The board was in a standard starting configuration, save for a single missing piece on the red side. The ruby statue from the first room, I realized. If I had taken that, I'd have one more piece to play, assuming I sat on the red side of the table. I sat down on the blue side, which was opposite from the entrance. It was unintuitive, but I hadn't been given any instructions. Nothing said I had to take the side with a disadvantage. My hand shook as I reached for the first piece. The mist was rising. How long did a game of Valor usually take? A half hour, maybe, against a new opponent? Maybe a little less if the enemy was missing a key piece. 15 minutes. I didn't have that kind of time. I reached across the table for the red side and systemically removed each of their pieces from the board, with the exception of their goddess. Then I moved my own visages into pincer positions around the enemy goddess. She was pinned. The game was won. A red key appeared in the center of the table. I cheered aloud, shamelessly. Cheating? Nah. I was just playing to win. I picked up the red key, heading for the gold door. I knew even before I tried it that the key wasn't going to fit. Apparently, brute forcing a victory on the board earned me a specific type of key, not access to any room I wanted. My winged key from the first room was gold. Would it work on the golden door? Probably, but I still wanted to save it for an emergency. I knew the orange door might take the red key. I hadn't been into an orange room, though. And I wasn't sure if it would have a gold exit as an option, meaning my gold key might be useless if I headed on that path. If I continued down the gold path, however, I was likely to continue to see orange doors. It was a safer option. I tried the golden key in the lock for the golden door. It twisted in place with a click. I retrieved the key successfully and then touched the gem. The door slid open. The next room was fairly straightforward. I could see three doors on the opposite side of a yawning chasm that covered two-thirds of the chamber. A standard chasm challenge. The door gems on the opposite side of the room were the same colors as the ones in the current chamber, confirming the pattern. The chasm wasn't fathomless this time. I saw water maybe 20 feet below where I stood. There was a ladder on the opposite side of the room leading out of the water and up to the side with the doors. I also saw two blocks with what looked like levers embedded in them. Presumably, those were switches to make a bridge across the water. Metal poles were anchored into the walls. There were two on each side, spanning the entire chasm. They were a few inches out from the wall, and it looked like I could potentially grab onto one and walk on the other. It was probably an alternate way to traverse the gap for someone with a lot of dexterity. Since I was able to successfully retrieve my key, it dispelled a bit of my paranoia about the keys being single use. I still couldn't be confident it would always be like that, but it meant I could probably do a little more testing without being overly worried about losing my keys. Before heading into the room with the chasm, I walked to the orange door to test my hypothesis about the red key. The mist was at nearly waist level now, so I didn't want to take much longer. The rising vapor was chilly, but didn't burn my skin or anything, and I wasn't feeling any obvious symptoms from it. I turned the key in the lock. It clicked into place. Apparently, red keys and orange doors were compatible. I retrieved the key and opened the door. The chamber in front of me was gigantic. Looking up from the doorway, I could see up hundreds of feet, with no indication of a ceiling above. A gigantic eye stared at me from the opposite side of the room. It was perhaps 50 feet away and 3 times my height. By that, I mean that the eye was 3 times my height. Just the eye. The monster it was attached to? Well, I couldn't get a good look at it from my vantage point, but it was the sort of size you counted in floors, not feet. I did see azure shield-like scales around the eye, though, and that gave me a good idea of what I was looking at. Seiryu, the god serpent, guardian of the serpent spire. It was looking right at me. I stepped away from the door, allowing it to close, and rushed into the chasm room. I never considered myself a coward. I didn't think of myself as very brave, either. When seeing a god beast, though, my level of bravery was largely irrelevant. No sane mortal would have lingered another moment in that creature's sight. I only hoped it wouldn't follow me. If it did, no walls, no teleportation to other rooms, and no degree of prayer would save me. Inside the chasm room, I forced my eyes shut, taking deep breaths. I'd been scared before, of course, but seeing the sheer scale of that thing, knowing that it could annihilate me effortlessly, it made me feel smaller, insufficient. What am I doing here? I shook my head, clearing my mind. I had work to do. I glanced around the room, getting a better look now that I was inside. The challenge seemed fairly straightforward, but first impressions could be deceptive. The floor wasn't divided into tiles, which was good. I didn't want to have to take a circuitous route. I took a few steps closer, nearing the chasm itself. The water started only a few feet below where I was standing. It looked deep, but not insurmountably so. I could see a stone floor maybe around 20 or so feet down. No signs of monsters in the water, but I did see a large grate on my own side that could hide something behind it. Horrible apparitions, maybe, or treasure. It was too easy. Maybe the room was designed to give me a chance to rest, but it didn't fit what I knew of Selyse. One of the goddess's many titles was the Mistress of Trials, and it was well known that she enjoyed providing mortals with escalating challenges. She was a gambler of a goddess, and she expected her followers to follow her example. So, what was the gamble here? Would the obvious handholds on the side break away from the wall, sending me into the water below? That was underwhelming. I mean, I just made it through 2 rooms that were almost undoubtedly lethal. I wasn't far from the water, so I pulled the dueling cane off my belt and extended it, reaching down to tip the metal blade into the liquid below. There was no obvious reaction when it touched the surface of the pool, so I withdrew the weapon and ever so carefully set it down. I opened my backpack, pressing the top of the quill against the wet metal. No telltale burning. I leaned down and sniffed, and the liquid didn't smell like much of anything. Finally, I gingerly pressed a finger on my left hand against the liquid. Nothing. Ordinary water, as far as I could tell. If it wasn't acid, what was I dealing with? Just a time limit, maybe? The backpack was already out, so I opened the book. When I flipped to the next page, I saw something new, fresh writing. The text appeared as I watched. "This is the room of false choices." That was it. No further explanation, no detail. In a moment of frustration, I removed the quill from my bag and wrote a reply on the same page. There was plenty of blank space. Each room started on a new one. "Dear mysterious book entity, I would like to inquire about more details pertaining to the Room of False Choices. Would you perhaps deign to provide me with insight on how best to proceed? Yours in inquiry, Corin of the House Cadence." I chuckled, dispelling some of the lingering fear from my own mind. Absurdity had always been an excellent shield against the threat of negative emotions. I did not expect a reply.
Dear Corin, may I call you Corin? There is no need to be sarcastic, but it's been so long since anyone has written me, or in me. I suppose I can offer you a glimmer of such insight. Provided you are not blind, you can currently see three doors from the entry of your room. Those are options for exiting your chamber, but they are not the best ones. As much as I am enjoying our correspondence, I must encourage you to hurry. Even as you read, your true choices begin to fade. Yours in useful insight, mysterious book entity.
I stared blankly at the now filled text. What? The reply had filled the remainder of that page and carried on to the next. I wasn't sure what that would mean for help in the next room, but for the moment I had bigger concerns. I stowed the book in the quill. I was apparently wasting time. So, the puzzle was figuring out the real exit. Or exits. My mind immediately went to the grate within the pool. That seemed accessible, if I felt like diving in, which at present I didn't. I checked the walls on my side next. Were there any hidden panels? Signs of secret doors? I didn't find anything immediately, but I did get a new idea. I tossed my backpack right back down, grabbing the book and quill and transcribing the text. Dear mysterious book entity, I'm looking for someone named Tristan Cadence. He entered the tower 5 years ago, and he may or may not currently be alive. I would be immensely grateful if you could tell me anything about what happened to him. Thank you, Corin. I stared at the book with growing nervousness for several moments before I saw the reply.
Dear Corin, you shouldn't be asking me about that right now. You should be more concerned about surviving this room. Yours, mysterious book entity.
I sighed, putting my things away. More time lost. I eyed the switches on the other side. What would they do? One of them had the switch side facing toward me. The other was facing the opposite direction. Interesting. I heard some kind of clicking noise somewhere, and then a loud scraping that traveled across the entire right wall of the room. Resh! I really hope that isn't the god beast looking for me. Okay, calm. Let's hit those switches. I had enough rope to reach the other side of the chasm, but I didn't trust myself to lasso one of the switches in a timely fashion. I chose to lift the dueling cane and aim it carefully at the switch on the right, pressing my thumb against the button. The blast ripped forward, striking true, and snapping the top half of the switch right off. Apparently those things weren't very sturdy. Three options left in my mind. A lasso, a swim, and the bars on the sides. I went with the lasso. I didn't trust that water in the slightest. My first attempt to catch one of the switches missed. The second time, the rope landed in the water, soaking through. That added weight made it harder to throw, but easier to control. I managed to encircle the switch that was facing away from me. With a yank, I pulled it toward me. The water began to drain from the pool, which was great in one respect. The water terrified me. Less great was that a comfortable 4-foot drop into water was now swiftly becoming a 24-foot fall into a pair of broken legs. I had a decision to make, and quickly. I dropped the rope and rushed for the nearest wall, where the handholds were, and grabbed on tight. Pulling hard, I determined that the holds seemed sturdy. Then I made my way across the chasm, hand over hand. The entire room rumbled as I moved, nearly sending me tumbling into the diminishing water below. I wanted to fall sooner rather than later if I was going to. There was enough water left to serve as a cushion, but it wasn't going to last much longer. Of course, I didn't want to fall at all. Even if that liquid was really water and not acid, I didn't know what other dangers lay within. Maybe a monster would come out of that grate as soon as the water drained, or acid would rise from the floor. One hand in front of the other. Twice I lost the grip with one of my hands and had to haul myself back into position, but I made it across. I walked over to the other switch, the one I had broken, and pushed the remaining half of the handle. Back where I had made my entrance, three doors appeared with gems of black, silver, and bronze coloring. I hadn't the faintest idea what those meant. My arms ached. I felt something on my head, dust or tiny rocks, crumbling from the ceiling above me. That rumbling wasn't illusory. The room was beginning to collapse. I turned back to the chasm. The water was nearly gone now. I had hoped one of the switches would provide a bridge, but that was clearly too much to ask for. Did I trust my arms to carry me back across the chasm to the new doors? The book had hinted that the exits nearest me were suboptimal solutions, but it didn't imply they'd be deadly. I might be better off taking the easy route out and testing myself in the next room. I found myself making my way over to the pit's edge, but not to cross it. Instead, I gripped the ladder, slowly climbing down. I needed to know what was behind that grate. The ladder was steel, slippery from contact with the water, but embedded in the wall similar to the handrails. It was sturdy and easy to climb. I tested a foot against the ground before dropping off the ladder entirely. The floor itself seemed solid, and I didn't see any signs of other traps. I made my way to the grate. It was taller than I was and blocked by iron bars. I saw a keyhole on the right side of the gate, but it wasn't marked with any specific color, nor was there a gem like on the doors above. Beyond the bars, I could see only darkness. I stuck the back of the quill through the bars first. It came back perfectly intact. The blackness wasn't some kind of annihilating field, at least. I slowly tried a finger next. There was no pain, no wetness, nothing uncomfortable. The floor rumbled. This may not be a gem-studded door, but I think it qualifies as a non-standard exit. I readied the dueling cane, stepped back, and blasted the bars off the gate. I had chosen my exit. I stepped into the dark. Chapter 3. Limited Options. I was immensely relieved when I found myself standing in an illuminated tunnel. The walls hugged close around me. The tunnel was roughly cylindrical and barely wider than I was. I turned around, finding a circular door behind me. There was no obvious lock, just a clear gemstone at the center. Interesting. I opened the door immediately. It led into a hexagonal chamber with pristine white walls. The walls were somewhat less important than the massive pendulums swinging back and forth throughout the room. I was barely quick enough to step back before one of them swished out of the doorway. I'd been inches away from being pulverized. The swinging spheres were solid stone, maybe 4 feet in diameter, and moving fast enough to pulp me. Odd that the trap swung outside of the door. I've never seen one of the traps exit the boundary of a room before. What was it doing before I walked in? Did the pendulums activate when I approached? Or was that sphere slamming into the door before I opened it? I didn't hear anything hitting the wall, but it could be covered in soundproofing runes. Now out of the pendulum's swinging range, I took a deep breath and looked at the room a bit more closely. 5 different pendulums, and for variety, a scythe-like blade swinging near the center. Each pendulum had a different trajectory. 1 more swinging in parallel on the left side of the room, 2 swinging perpendicular to the first, located on the right side of the room, 1 final pendulum swinging diagonally near the rear of the left side. More interestingly, there were square-shaped crystalline sections on various parts of the walls, roughly 4 feet across. A blue one on the ceiling, a red one on the right wall, and a yellow one on the floor below where one of the pendulums were swinging. No doors, aside from the entrance. The crystalline sections were presumably the exits. Evaluating the speed of the swinging balls of doom, I figured I could make it out of the doorway and onto the right side of the room between swings if I really wanted to. I really didn't. I stepped further away from the door, allowing it to close. The pendulum cracked against the door a moment later, and I shuddered at the sound of the impact. Fortunately, the door remained intact.
I didn't see any signs of damage on my side of it either. I decided I'd consider this a potential exit route, but I was interested in seeing what was at the end of the hall. Also, I was even more interested in not getting stuck in a room filled with whirling death traps. The hall was long enough that I managed to slip my dueling cane back on my belt and unsling my backpack to remove the book before I reached the end of it. I skipped to the last section with writing, "You shouldn't have done that." I blinked. I put the book away. The path terminated at a rectangular chamber, and I could immediately see why the book had been concerned. First, there was the dead body. Blood pooled around a corpse in the center of the chamber, some of it looking congealed. The victim was a man around my age, dressed in fancy clothes. His most distinctive characteristic was the hole in his chest, roughly the size of my fist. It went straight through his body, as perfectly cylindrical as the hallway I emerged from. He wasn't the only one there, however. At the back of the room were three smaller chambers constructed from some sort of transparent material, like a type of glass or crystal. Each chamber held a single person. Two of them were looking at me. The chamber on the far right held a woman in her 20s, leaning forward against the transparent wall. I'd barely heard the banging. Something seemed to be dampening the sound. She wore garb I'd associate with a traveling merchant. A lot of pouches, a couple necklaces, and heavy boots and gloves. From her dark brown skin, I assumed she was Kalish. After a moment, she knocked on the wall, frowning at me. The central chamber held a black-haired man wearing a silver eye mask. The exposed section on the bottom of his face was light-skinned and clean-shaven, the latter point implying that he was either relatively young or hadn't been in the cell for very long. He leaned against the back wall of the chamber, his arms folded. The hint of a long, sheathed weapon, most likely a sword, was visible beneath his ornate overcoat. My heart stopped for an instant when I looked at him. The masked man looked almost like my brother. Tristan had seemed taller, but I'd been 12 years old when he'd left. Maybe that was just my memories playing a trick. Their weight and build were about right. The figure in the cell looked a bit more athletic, but 5 years was a long time to potentially put on some muscle. His hair was too dark, too long, but that could be explained by hair dye and the passage of time. His skin was too light, but maybe he was sick from all this time in a cell. I shook my head. The similarities were enough to trigger painful memories, but the differences were too pronounced. I wanted it to be my brother in there, but it wasn't him. I'd have to find Tristan later. On the far left was another prone figure, a boy. He looked a few years younger than me. His skin was even darker than the young woman's, nearly pitch black. His head was shaved, and he had an extensive web-like tattoo in white ink across his forehead. No pool of blood around him, fortunately. Upon seeing the woman continue to pound on the wall, I realized what I was seeing. Prison cells. They were trapped inside. And someone, possibly their jailer, was dead right outside. Disconcerting. I frowned, moving toward the corpse. The masked man raised a single hand while I approached, giving a curt shake of his head. Was the body a trap? Or was he just saying that it was far too late for the victim? Or maybe he didn't want me to know how the man had been killed. I glanced around the room, looking for anything vaguely cylindrical-shaped on the walls. I didn't find anything of the kind, but I did find a hexagonal panel on the floor, not far from where the man had fallen. Was the dead man a candidate like me? Someone who had stumbled upon the jail? Rash. Carefully, I went to the body, ignoring the masked man. I avoided the hexagonal shape, glancing from side to side as I knelt. The woman who had been pounding on the wall gave me a curt nod. I took that as a sign that I was safe to continue, reached down and rolled the body toward me. I heard a click. I jumped backward, just in time to avoid the spear of light that flashed across the room from left to right, flickering and fading as it hit the opposite wall. Shuddering where I stood, I looked down, finding a small, depressed tile beneath the body I had just moved. I'd just re-triggered the trap that had killed him. If I hadn't seen the body, I might have died in the same way. His eyes stared open in disbelief. I thought I recognized him from the line outside.